Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. It's the 14th of August, 2013, and today we're joined on the line from the United Kingdom by Martin Cassini of EqualityStreets.com. Martin, it's your first time on the program, so thanks for joining us today on the Corbett Report.
Thank you.
Well, it's good to have you here to talk about a very interesting idea and one that really struck me out of the blue. I don't even remember how I found the website or the videos that I'm going to be pointing people to later in this conversation. But I did come across it, and I'm glad I did, because it's a fascinating idea, Equality Streets being a campaign for traffic system reform. And I don't want to belabor the point by prejudging it or putting words in your mouth. Why don't you tell us what Equality Streets is all about?
It's a way to rethink how we live on the roads. At the moment, we live and die by priority for the main road, priority at roundabouts in the UK from the right and in the US from the left. We're always waiting for someone else to clear before we're allowed to go. And I think that most of our road safety and congestion problems could be solved with this shift in perception, so that we change from deferring to other mightier road users, only made mighty through the law of priority, which confers unequal rights. And if we adopted the idea of equality, so that as social beings, we've evolved really to take it in turns. Why shouldn't we take it in turns on the road? So once you start thinking of all road users as equals, exercising equal rights and responsibilities, suddenly it becomes a social situation rather than a competition for gaps and green time.
Exactly right. And it's a fascinating idea, but for people who have literally been steeped their entire lives in the rules of the road and the idea of traffic control to the point where red light, green light is a game I remember playing vividly in kindergarten, it's almost impossible, I think, for us who have been steeped in this our whole lives to imagine a system of road use without those types of traffic controls. Can you describe for us what this would look like when you, for example, approach a junction?
There wouldn't be any priority. It would simply, if two people arrived at the same time, they'd interact and they'd say, after you. The priority system says, get out of my way. But okay, it's not necessarily going to get rid of conflicts entirely, but it does a much better job of resolving conflict than a system based on priority. Imagine pedestrians or people on foot on a busy train station, concourse. I mean, we don't crash into each other. My interest in avoiding collision with you mirrors your interest in avoiding collision with me. They say that we become monsters when we get behind a wheel, but I submit that one of the probably the biggest reason we become or our personalities change when we get behind a wheel is because we suddenly have to submit to a system of regulation which usurps our judgment. You know, who is the better judge of when to go, or indeed how fast or slow to go? You and me at the time and the place, or traffic lights and speed limits fixed by absent regulators?
The analogy of how we negotiate these types of situations in our everyday pedestrian activities, walking around in crowded buildings or crowded hallways and the like, is the obvious analogy, and yet it doesn't really occur to us to think in those terms. But you're exactly right. I have experienced walking rage, I suppose, once in my life when someone get angry at me for walking at the wrong speed or something in a hallway. I'm not quite sure what the problem was, but that was one occurrence in my life, whereas, of course, we've all experienced road rage, either ourselves personally or those around us, many, many times in our life. And I think you're right, it has something to do with the types of priority systems that are in place, denoting that there's something very wrong. And I think it's important to belabor the point that this is not just a matter of convenience or something of that sort. It's literally a matter of life and death. Perhaps you can speak to the incredible carnage that takes place on the roads every year and how this quality system could, in fact, reduce that.
I read somewhere that more people have died on the roads than died in two world wars. I don't know what the reference is, but I certainly know that in England, well, the current death and injury toll is 25,000 a year. 25, I mean, in 10 years in Iraq, I think we've lost 200 soldiers. That's in a decade, and that's in wartime. I mean, we're talking peacetime. So 25,000, okay, of those 25,000, there are probably between 2,800 and say about 3,000 deaths. Well, 3,000 deaths a year and 22,000 serious injuries resulting in a lifetime on life support is a complete indictment of the current system. I mean, what I find most unspeakable about the current priority system is it puts the onus on the child to beware the motorist when it could and so clearly should be the other way around. You know, if we were social beings instead of robots programmed by traffic regulation, we would see other road users, especially vulnerable road users, as fellow human beings instead of obstacles in the way of the next traffic light. So, okay, did you want to step in here?
I just wanted to say that not only is that correct, but it seems that every assumption that we have about what this would look like if we remove these traffic system controls is exactly the opposite of what actually takes place. It's such a counterintuitive idea, but for example, I know you've pointed out in your work before the idea that what motivates drivers to drive so quickly when approaching an intersection is the fact that they have a green light signaling they have priority, or even a yellow light signaling that they should speed up to try to make it before the red light comes. Whereas if it was an uncontrolled junction, they would have to approach every junction with caution and with an understanding that there are other people in the junction itself. Can you speak to those counterintuitives that take place in this in the equality system?
I mean, well, it's ironic that whenever traffic lights are out of action on the road network here, you get announcements from the Department for Transport or from the local traffic authority to proceed with caution. So it's ironic that when traffic lights are, in quotes, working, you don't need to exercise caution.
Yes, exactly. And yet, of course, as we know, many, 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 many accidents still happen with the lights working perfectly.
Well, yeah, because with the priority system and traffic signals and people speeding up to beat the amber light, as you say, or you call it yellow in the States, we call it amber here. Yeah, I mean, there are conflicting speeds. There are totally inappropriate conflicting speeds. You know, one set of road users are idling at zero miles an hour, and the other lot are traveling through the junction at least 30 miles an hour. And, okay, there's a move here to go for 20 mile an hour speed limits in urban settings. But I think, to my mind, 20 is a number, and we shouldn't be driving by numbers. We should drive according to context. Would you want to be hit by a bus doing 20? No, nor would I. So, yes, I mean, I suppose it's counterintuitive, but when you think about it, it just makes complete sense. And the current system by which we live and die, you know, to me, makes nonsense. And it's a scandal that it is in force, it seems to me. And also the vast tens of billions that are devoted to this system of traffic regulation, which does far more harm than good, is almost, you know, it's obscene.
I agree completely. But again, for those, I have no doubt there will be people in the audience who are listening to this who will just have no conception that there we could, in fact, remove these types of traffic control systems and that could take place. But in fact, it has taken place. There have been a number of test trials of this idea in different countries around the world. And I know that you've done some research into those. Why don't you tell us about some of those actual examples?
Okay. Well, I'll just go back to the first, to when I saw the light about traffic lights. That was in Cambridge in the year 2000, Cambridge, England, not Cambridge, Massachusetts, where I was living at the time. And I approached a junction, a traffic lit junction, where normally I'd have to wait at least 5 minutes to get through this junction. Three entire signal cycle changes to get through. And it was always congested, this junction. On this particular occasion, normal time of day, it was about lunchtime, actually, I sailed through. There was no congestion. There was a complete, the place was deserted. I wondered suddenly if there was a bank holiday that no one had told me about. And then as I sailed through, I craned round and noticed that the traffic lights were out of action. Now, I'd often thought that traffic lights were badly timed, you know, with often you having approaching a green light and suddenly it would change and you'd have to screech to a halt or stop and wait, and often there'd be no conflicting traffic. But on that particular day, I suddenly realized that traffic lights per se are maybe bad news and are an unnecessary evil rather than a necessary evil. I mean, at multi-lane intersections at peak times, I concede there might be a use for traffic lights. But other than that, I think we can get by under our own steam using our innate intelligence and our highly evolved ability to negotiate movement as human beings who basically have empathy towards each other. But the system prevents that. It disables that feeling of empathy. It prevents infinite filtering opportunities and expressions of fellow feeling. So anyway, for years, I was trying to get a TV series off the ground about this subject, and I got very close on a number of occasions with the BBC, but they never quite went for it. Partly, I discovered in 2005 that they didn't believe that it could work. So then I started getting articles published, and then I did a Newsnight report, which is a BBC Two sort of fairly flagship current affairs news program. And on that program, I called for a trial to test the idea that we could cope far better without traffic lights. So, and then I kept an eye. Well, thanks to Google Alerts, I had a Google Alert with traffic signals out of action named. And so I would get these alerts. And I got one from a place in the West Country called Portishead, quite near Bristol in England. And so I read the article, got in touch, the local press article, got in touch immediately with the local councillor, told him all about the my idea, and he said, great, let's look into it. So I went to see him, showed him the video I'd made, the case against traffic lights, or the case for a no-lights trial. He showed it to the full chamber, and 26 out of 27 councillors agreed to switching off the traffic lights. So we switched them off. We just bagged them over and switched them off on the 14th of September 2009. And there was an instant change. I mean, you've probably seen the little video on YouTube about Portishead, the traffic lights trial. From excessive queues and ridiculous amounts of traffic and pollution, suddenly there was silence in the centre. And there are some rather heartwarming interviews with people on the street, from school children to pensioners, and all were absolutely delighted at the transformation that had occurred thanks to the switching off of the signals. One woman timed her journey. She had been a skeptic. She spoke to me before the lights went off. She said, it won't work. People won't give way to each other. She came, I asked her to come back to me the next day, which she did. And she said, yes, I'll have to eat my hat, because I said she might have to. And she had timed her journey. Normally, it took her 20 minutes to get home from work. On this occasion, without the lights, 5 minutes.
And it did not lead to any injuries or accidents, did it?
No accidents. It more than, okay, monitoring over quite a long period. Actually, it was 9 months, then 18 months, and the signals were removed after 18 months. So scientific monitoring, we had CCTV cameras on every approach, and the traffic engineering firm that I worked with had done, you know, set up the trial and monitored it properly. So monitoring showed that journey times had fallen by over half with no loss of safety. There was a minor shunt when the BBC film crew was on site, and someone, I think, was distracted by the film crew and just tapped into the car in front, but no personal injury accidents whatsoever. Not that there were many before. But the next best traffic lights off scheme, which has gone permanent, is in Poynton. That's really the flagship example of this type of redesign of the junction where you'd have no priority and you create a streetscape to express a social as distinct from traffic engineering context. There in Poynton, they used to have quite a number of accidents with pedestrians, but since the lights have been switched off and the streetscape has been redesigned, they haven't had a single accident, as can be seen in the video. If you Google Poynton regenerated or go to YouTube and just put in Poynton, P-O-Y-N-T-O-N, then you find the video. And it's well, as people have said, it's heartwarming to see it. It's inspiring, really.
It's at this point that I will also direct people to your two-part video series on your YouTube channel, Roads Unfit for People, Roads Fit for People. I'll include the links to those videos in the show notes for this interview so that people can watch that for themselves and find out more about the Portishead trial, for example. Just, again, fascinating to watch. And I could understand that people might be skeptical out there until they see it with their own eyes. So I wholeheartedly encourage people to do that. And it really is heartwarming to see just such an almost unthinkable change having such an incredible impact on the way that people not only interact on the roads, but interact as human beings. It's an interesting idea. And you've pointed this out a couple of times already, so let's dwell on that for a moment. The traffic control systems have arisen out of a traffic engineering context, but Equality Streets is about a social construct. Can you tell us about that social construct that informs this ideology, and what can it tell us about the broader context of society and the way that it's regulated by these types of rules and laws that govern our interactions?
The original meaning of anarchism is self-government. It was given a bad name in the 20s, unfortunately, but it has retained that bad label. But there's a form of politics called minarchism, which is sort of mini-anarchism. And it means that you grant that there is a need for government intervention, for state intervention in certain fields of society. You know, some people can't look after themselves. There's a need for welfare without question. You know, there are needy people around. So you need some state support, some state help. But minarchism is about minimal state intervention. And so it maximizes our innate ability to cooperate and to feel empathy for our fellow human beings and to self-regulate. So the traffic, the idea of Equality Streets does really symbolize that wider idea of self-control being a better model, if you like, for organizing society than state control in every sphere. Interestingly, in this country, in the UK, the conservative, which is the right-wing side of the political spectrum, they tend to be more interested in my ideas, which sort of troubles me, actually, because my sympathy is with a fairer distribution of wealth. So I have more sympathies with the left side, but I've an old friend of mine who is in the House of Lords in England. She's been a Labour firebrand all her life, and I went to see her to talk about these ideas, and she got the idea within minutes. But she said you'd have trouble persuading Labour because Labour likes regulation, and unfortunately, it's an odd thing about socialism, that they don't seem to trust the individual to do the right thing. I sort of believe in benevolent dictatorship in a way, you know, the Platonic idea, and I don't think that's ever been tried. But so minarchism is sort of a concept that comes close to that. I mean, you do need a strong, intelligent person at the head of things. I mean, I don't think democracy might be the least bad system that exists currently, but it's not the ideal system because all sorts of self-interest groups get involved. I mean, as now, for instance, Westminster City Council have asked me to make some videos for them about the cycling changes or the support for the cycling strategy that the government is introducing. They're spending about £94 million on a cycling strategy to create more cycle lanes and make the roads safer for cycling. Well, to me, that's supporting a special interest group. I would, you know, my thing is to say, look, spend that money on equality for all. You know, we all have an equal right to the road space. Let's design the road network to reflect that social context so that we can all interact as human beings.
Well, yes, that's an important part of all of this. And I certainly understand the appeal of the benevolent dictatorship idea, but as an anarchist, I don't think that benevolent dictatorship would be sustainable or really realistic. So I truly do have faith in human beings to be able to negotiate with each other absent these types of overarching systems of control, these unflexible, unbending laws that have been created in a different time and place and context that are supposed to govern all of our interactions. And this, again, I just think is an absolutely brilliant microcosmic example of that principle, and one that, again, has been tried and has been proven to be effective. So once again, I will point people to the videos that we've talked about today, and also, of course, your website, equalitystreets.com. Are there any other resources or anything in information that you'd like to point people to about this work?
Another word or another expression of Equality Streets is shared space, and that's quite well known. So the leading practitioner in this country of shared space is a man called Ben Hamilton Bailey. Bailey is spelt B-A-I-L-L-I-E. So Ben Hamilton - Bailey Associates. He's definitely worth Googling. His website is definitely worth visiting. We agree on most things, although we have a slight disagreement because he thinks that design alone is enough to bring about these changes, this transformation that we need. And in a sense, he's done that in Poynton. I mean, he did redesign Poynton to express a social context, and what we've got there is slow speed traffic, no 20-mile-an-hour limits, no special speed limits, free parking, free on-street parking, all traffic and pedestrians mingling in a merry mix. So he has achieved it to a large extent by road design. But you still get some drivers approaching a little bit fast, and I haven't seen it at night. And I think that culture change is crucial to the full transformation that's required, and also possibly legal reform which would put the onus or would make the driver automatically liable for an accident with a vulnerable road user, unless the vulnerable road user could prove a reckless unless the driver could prove a reckless act on the part of the vulnerable road user. I mean, in Holland, for example, a human being under the age of 14 who gets hit by a driver, the driver will automatically be liable. Over the age of 14, the driver has to prove a reckless act in order not to be found liable. So, okay, this is getting a little bit complicated, perhaps, the legal framework, but I think it's worth thinking about, because sometimes I get comments on the YouTube site saying, you know, who's going to be liable in the event of an accident? Well, actually, it should be the bigger, you know, might is not right. It should be the vulnerable road user who is the victim here. But, you know, again, ironically, the current traffic control system exonerates the driver for hitting a pedestrian if the driver has a green light. I mean, how, you know, antisocial and how delinquent is that?
It is just another symptom, I think, of the fundamental problem. And I think you're right. I think design can go a significant way towards changing people's behaviors. But I think, of course, those behaviors take place in a cultural context that has been conditioned for a very long time. So I think there needs to be cultural and, as you say, legal implications for all of these changes. And I think they go hand in hand. It's an overwhelming project, and I'm sure it is one that is painfully slow to be a part of and to witness. But hopefully it is an idea that can catch on. I do have a number of listeners in the UK. If there are people in the UK who are interested in supporting this work, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can get in touch with me via the website. I've got my email addresses on there at Equality Streets.